Welcome to our Forever Abstinent workshop. And my name is John. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, John.
And will you please join me in the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and a wisdom to know the difference. Yeah, I was so nervous about doing this, and gosh, I had my books in the car, then I didn't, and I couldn't find them, and then so thank God my friend David M. Helped me out here. So, and then I found them, so you know, I'm just loaded with stuff here. But anyhow, what we're going to do is talk a little bit about Forever Abstinent, and I asked some people, other members here to join me that I've known for a few years, and I chose them because I just like the programs they do, and they've been confidants with me for many years, and so basically, you know, we'll be talking about Forever Abstinent, and you know how we work the program is written. And so I'm going to, our first speaker is Carl, and so he will start out here. So.
Good morning. I'm Carl. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Carl.
And though I may not look it now, I used to be a pear-shaped wonder. And it was so bad, the cardiologist called me clinically obese because it was all centered in my stomach. And even though I'm 5'7 and a half, I had a 44-inch waist. I top 200 pounds at one point. At this point, I weigh like 141. And so that was significant for my small frame. I had a condition known as lipodystrophy. It was a direct result of another illness that I have and the medication I have to take for that illness. And the doctor said there was no way to get rid of it unless I went under the knife and they had to surgically scrape out the fat, and there was no guarantee that it wouldn't come back. And then I was also seeing endocrinologist, that's it. My tongue gets tied on certain words. I used to have a speech impairment. So anyway, my endocrinologist, I said it wrong again, he said that if I didn't do something drastic about my weight, my heart would explode. I was on rapid heartbeat medication, high blood pressure medication, two different medications for diabetes, and a host of others just to control the effects of what was happening to my body because of my weight. And he said he thought it was significant. And when my doctor gave me that drastic news, I ran into a friend at another program I go to, and I'd watched him for several months. He had gone through a drastic transformation. And so I went up to him. I said, well, you know, you look great. You're not sick, are you? And he goes, because, you know, I know people, they lose a lot of weight. They get sick. And he goes, oh, no, no. I said, well, how did you do it? He goes, how? I said, that's what I asked. How did you do it? He goes, Carl, I went to how. And I go, I knew what how was when he said it like that. He goes, yeah? I go, how much did you lose? Well, at that time, he had lost 70 pounds. And it was like a miracle. And so when my doctor had given me this information, I called him up and I said, you know, he had given me his number to call him if I ever needed it. So I called him up, and he took me to Cole Street, which was a meeting back then. And I went to Cole Street and I thought, okay, well, I'll do it. And so he had me eat regularly that day. It didn't last because I made it the first day, but at the end of the second day, I had that moment of clarity after I emptied out my refrigerator in a matter of seconds. And I called him up and I told him what I did. He says, okay, you know, you've had your moment of clarity. Let's do this for real. I had my trifold pamphlet. That's all I had, with the first 30 days on it. And that's what I went by. So the first 30 days, I did it by the letter, and I didn't add anything optional because I was clinically obese, right? I didn't think I could afford anything optional. And, you know, the only thing I did do was, if you said if I wanted, you know, a little bit more salad dressing, then I should add some lemon juice to it, which was, you know, I thought that was thing. And then at night, if I wanted to have something on my vegetables at night, put a lemon wedge on it, you know. So I did that because that was totally acceptable. And so I did that. After 30 days, and I must say I had lost 20 pounds at the end of 30 days, I went, wow. And then I had to go on a business trip. Okay, going on a business trip where to North Carolina, where they deep fried lettuce leaves, you know, that's what they do back down south. And so I go there, and for the majority, I have to eat out in restaurants. What do? I bring my little igloo bag, I bring a measuring cup, and I bring a food scale. And you know, what I did is I weighed and measured each and every single scrap of food I got, the vegetables, the salads, and most importantly, the meat. And I tried to order, you know, the smallest, you know, filet I got. And I caught the restaurant shortchanging their customers. Because when I'd order, you know, like I was only supposed to have 4 ounces of protein, but when I ordered a 6 ounce filet to cut it down to get the right amount, and it came at me at 3.5 ounces, I'd complain because I wasn't getting my 4 ounces. So anyway, what happened is I was gone for 2 months. And during that 2 months, I caught thyroiditis. I had an inflammation of the thyroid. And over a couple days, I managed to drop an additional 20 pounds. So in all, I lost 61 pounds in 2.5 months. And it was like, I called my sponsor, I called my doctor. He said, look, you're okay. You're already on rapid heartbeat medication. You won't have a heart attack, you know? And so what happened was I'm 20 pounds underweight now. And so I come back from my trip. My sponsor is, first he introduced to grain. And, you know, I'm doing all this. I'm 20 pounds underweight. My doctor now says I've reestablished, my metabolism is now that of a person in his 20s. You know, I'm back to my weight. I'm 124 pounds, which is what I weighed in my 20s. And I'm like, you know, zipping around. And I really want to get to 145, 150. And so what we do is we have to restructure. I'm automatically on maintenance. We start gradually adding foods. And it's really amazing because I had to do it with a sponsor and I had to do it by the book. And, you know, I'm on medical abstinence because, of course, I had showed the food program to my endocrinologist from the get-go. He signed off on it from the very beginning because I have a life-threatening illness. And if I didn't run it by him first, before I started, it would have been really foolish. You know, so that's how I've kept in contact the whole time with this. So as I added food, I did it the whole time. Now, I'm going to say something real interesting. I believe in going to a real doctor, a medical professional, endocrinologist, if you can, you know, because one of the nutritionists I had to see as part of, you know, in contact with my medical plan, you know, as part of the doctor, you know, the doctor had the supervisor and everything. She tried to say I was underweight. The doctor was okay with my weight. She tried to say I was underweight and tried to put me on Ensure, corn syrup, you know. And I fought her tooth and nails. I said, lady, I'm not going to do that. If you don't like it, go talk to my doctor, you know. I distrust nutritionists. Anyone who has a plan from a nutritionist and try to give it to me, I say, why don't you get your doctor to write off on it first? I'll accept it from your doctor. I don't know if your nutritionist is working with your doctor. You know, sorry, that's my personal experience and my opinion. But I have used this book. I had to go through 5 years before I got to my normal weight. Now, what happens when I get to my normal weight? I start going over it. And what do? I have to cut back on all this food I'm eating. Not only do I have to cut back, but then I have to really cut back. Because in my medical abstinence, I had been eating like 3 meals and 2 snacks. Then it was 3 meals and 1 snack. 5 minutes?
It was 10 minutes.
10 minutes, so I have 5 minutes. Then it was 3 meals. Then it was cutting portions. Then it was like, now I'm supposed to be on the Schedule E for people 5'6 to 5'10 or something for men. If I ate what was on Schedule E, I'd look like a blimp. So I can't eat that Schedule E in the forever abstinent. Once you get on maintenance, once your weight, and I still declare myself medically abstinent because I have no idea when the wasting disease that I do have is going to hit me one more time. And so once you're on maintenance, you know, we have this book. You constantly have to be vigilant in, like, you know, constantly once a week we're allowed to weigh ourselves now. Once a week we have to look at what's going on with our weight. We have to examine the kinds of foods we eat. I find that if I eat one thing too much of one thing consistently, and I'm a creature of habit, I want to eat the same things over and over and over again, and then I start putting on a couple pounds and I go, why is that happening? And I look at what I'm eating daily and I go like, oh, I gotta quit, cut that out. And you know, the thing is a lot of times I don't want to cut it out, so I try to like fool it, you know, by eating it every other day. And if I fool it, you know, I fool myself, because soon if I don't do something, you know, real interesting, if I don't like really rigidly make it once a week, it'll be every day again. So I have to be really careful, because, you know, fool you, you'll fool me. And I end up fooling me all the time. And that's not a good way to go. Forever abstinent, it's funny, I was involved in 2010, was it, in rereading this, proofreading it, going over it again and again and again. And it wasn't until like a couple days ago I started picking up and rereading it, because I thought it was burned into my brain case. And I just had to make sure it was, and it is. And you know, the wonderful thing is when I was on the board, I was trying to do something about those pink, blue, and yellow packets. And it's funny thing, those things, I found out I can't really do them because they trigger my lipodystrophy and they make me start to swell in the midsection. And it's really a funny thing. They act just like sugar on my body. That's for me, you know. don't care about you. I just know that for me, I can't do those either. And though lately I'm going through a bit of an emotional thing, I have been putting some in my coffee, but I'd rather put a pack of Splenda in my coffee than eat a. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Carl. And our next speaker is Maggie.
Hello, everyone. My name is Maggie. I'm a compulsive eater, compulsive overeater. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be on this panel because it's one of my favorite topics. And I really, I find that this book is extremely helpful, especially with the emotional aspects. And so since coming into the CEA HOW program, I was not one of those, like I think the other panelists were, that just came right in, surrendered, did it, followed the rules. My last abstinence began 9/1/09, but I've been in CEA HOW since it first began. I was in the meetings with Ray. I met Fred S. on a retreat. I've been around since 1983, so I've seen the program evolve, and I knew that I was going to have to surrender, and I was going to have to admit that I was still overeating on the regular. I was still having sugars and still trying to control and enjoy my food. Now, I do enjoy my food today, but I don't have to make it taste like dessert, and I don't have to go the limit as far as the sugar. Okay, it's sixth in, on the thing, and now I'll have it. I try to stay away from sugar. I am have a tendency to diabetes and a tendency to high cholesterol. So the program has really been excellent for my health. And by reading this book again, I found some information about how the program started, and with Father Dowling, how he used the program by having a very strict food plan. And knowing that he was a compulsive eater, that he had a problem that could be approached with the 12 steps. Every morning I wake up and I pray and meditate. I call a sponsor. My sponsor actually and I speak to one another. She calls me and I give her my food. She gives me my food. And I've done all of the steps. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. And I was afraid of maintenance, and my other sponsor that I had before was, are we at 10 minutes?
No.
Okay. My other sponsor that I had before was so beautiful and so lovely, and every morning we would pray on the phone. She was just such a spiritual woman, wonderful woman, but she was a long way from maintenance. And so when I would get to where I wanted to be able to maintain my weight, people would say, you need to get a maintenance sponsor. Well, I'm not leaving my sponsor. One day I called her and she died. This was not a good thing for me. I didn't say, oh, whoopee, I can get a maintenance sponsor. But it turned out that it worked out that I was able to find a maintenance sponsor. And this is the first time really in my life that I'm at a weight that I'm really happy to maintain and pleased with. I'd start to creep up again. I mean, even in the beginning of CEA habits, since 9/1/09, I have abstained the forever abstinent way. At my maintenance, I really have to be careful not to add too much. So we started with, just a fruit at night, and then that became, like he says, doing something daily doesn't work for me. So I needed to tighten up and just have fruit at night some days, 3 days a week. And some days I have two grains, but I have to be really careful. I'm 5'1", and I don't need to add a lot of food to the second 30 days food plan. And that was my problem, because I'd hear other people, the ones that run and do all kinds of wonderful exercise, they can have 6 or 7 a day, but I'm not there. So what I wanted to add, besides how wonderful I think this is, and all the tools, making the calls, all of that are extremely important, but one thing is engaging in debates with people outside of the program, usually who are heavy, has gotten me into a lot of frustration, you know, to say, you know, that is, what's the difference between, and you know it's the same thing, you know you're not being reasonable, you know. They'll say stuff like that. And I said, well, it works for me, just the word flower is there. I know that I'm being obedient to the program. Oh, that's what the Nazis were. You know, I mean, you're going to get stuff like that from people that you think are dear friends. So I have just found that it does me a lot of good to just be somewhat assertive and say, you know, I really, unless you want to hear about the program so that you can be on it, I don't want to debate about my program. And so that's given me a lot of peace. I really don't want to discuss my program with you. Usually the people that want to try to sabotage the program have some jealousy, and they're upset about their own difficulties with the program. So I'm just so glad that that's the reason that the meetings, either online or in person, I really like the meetings in person, but the meetings are essential because we all know that we can't just have one. The medical profession, you're talking about your doctor. My doctor, I went to the doctor and I mentioned, you know, I'm in a program for compulsive eating. I'm a compulsive eater. And I said, I just can't eat one. And she said, oh, yes, you can. Sure you can. You know, like, you're not going to get fat because from one. I said, no, you don't understand. I don't stop with one. I'm not capable of stopping with one. And they'll say, well, you haven't tried it in 20 years. You know, maybe you can now. Those things are really sabotaging. So I'm really careful about what medical professional is going to sign off on my program. You know, they might just sign up on an occasional, you know, you'll hear stories. I have a friend who's lost 120 pounds on Weight Watchers, and once a week she has a piece of. I've played with that. I was a person who always had to have a. And they don't even make the same kind anymore. So if I wanted to get into that, it wouldn't be there for me. Thank God. But I'm just, that's the struggle that I have with my food plan, is that I need to go to enough meetings and be close enough to the steps all the time and to my higher power and to remember where I came from, to be able to stay right on the path and come to things like this and see people that I've heard on the phone. And just, it's such a wonderful fellowship. I have a really dear friend in Northern California who has stayed abstinent by being on the phone bridge. She's in an area that has no meetings. So she's been able to do it with that kind of that kind of support. And I know that it's because of following the food plan and because of using the tools, and the fellowship is important to me. So I think that's what I have to say for now. Thank you.
And let's see. Thank you, Maggie. And let's see. Our next speaker will be Pamela.
Good morning. My name is Pamela. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hey, Pamela.
And I'm very grateful to be in recovery. Thank you, John, so much for asking me to join you on this panel on Forever Abstinent, which is the basis of our program. I was thinking as I was sitting here, and I've thought this often, actually, that because of the structure of our program, and that's why I'm here, because of the structure of this program, I need structure, it gives me freedom. Because of the structure of our program, we don't do this program without a sponsor. And the only danger in that is that it can become like the game of telephone. You know, if my sponsor worked this program a certain way and expected me to work the program exactly as she did, it would become her program, not the program of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous Howe. So I think it's important that we have workshops based on Forever Abstinent, which is what our program is. And I just wanted to say, I was coming down here this morning in the elevator, and a woman was standing waiting for the elevator with me, and I said, hi, how are you doing? And I assumed she was one of us, and because she was thin. And then she said, what group are you with? And I thought, oh, she's not with us. And so I said, we were a 12-step program, Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how? And she said, well, that's good. It looks like it's working. And I'm always happy. That's how we attract as well as promote. You know, we're not a secret society. People need to hear about us. So that's why I told her our name. She might pass it on. Lots of things that I've heard today. One thing I wanted to comment on was maintenance. There is a workshop later today on maintenance, because often in our program people have a fear of maintenance, just as we have a fear of anything that we don't know about, you know, the fear of the unknown, and they, oh, maintenance, that's all this food, it's so scary. No, it's not. Maintenance is exactly the same as the first 30 days and the second 30 days. We have a food plan. I write down my food, I call my sponsor and I commit it, I weigh and measure it, and that's it. It's exactly the same. So I think it's important to dispel any fear of maintenance. It's just another part of the program. So this is a workshop on Forever Abstinent, which is our program, basically. And Forever Abstinent, we started out with a trifold, as some members of the panel have mentioned. And then in 2000, our co-founder Fred S. was chair of a committee that was formed by the delegates at conference to create an actual booklet with our food plan. How was incorporated in 1998 as Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how? And prior to that, In the U.S., there were about 7 HOW food plans, and they were basically the same, but they had little regional variations. So when we incorporated as our own entity, as Compulsive Eaters Anonymous HOW in 1998, of course, because of the first tradition, unity, we had to have one unified food plan. So that's how Forever Abstinent came about. And that's how we move from the trifold into our actual book, which explains how we work our, it's not just the food plan, it explains how we work our program, and it's so important. It's such an important reference. And one thing I, as a sponsor, am trying to train myself to do, and I encourage everybody to do, is when a sponsee asks me a question, can I have this, can I have that, rather than answering it from my own experience, from my program, my first statement is, what does Forever Abstinent say? It always goes back to the literature. What does Forever Abstinent say? It's good for the sponsee to look it up. It's good for me. And so I think that's one of the most important things, because, again, we have the game of telephone. You know, well, this is what I do. Well, this is what my sponsor does. Or I know I've had sponsees in the past who say, well, I talked to so-and-so and their sponsor lets them do this, or I talked to so-and-so and their sponsor lets them do this, and I always say, I don't sponsor by consensus. You know, I sponsor my program, this is how I sponsor, and if you're comfortable with that, that's great, we'll work together, and if not, you'll be more comfortable with someone else. So going through Forever Abstinent, you know, it's all here. I always say this, all these questions, I work in the World Service Office, so emails that come in, inquiries that come in, I see and forward them to the board or the appropriate person. And many, probably 99% of the questions that come in are answered in our literature. And the answer is, look at Forever Abstinent, look at the sponsor guidelines, read the See How website. The See How website is becoming a major resource for information. There's a link called Just Ask, and that contains questions that have been sent into World Service and the board's answer to those questions. And they're questions that occur over and over and over again. So you can often go to the website, find the answer to your question. And generally it'll say, ask your sponsor asks their sponsor, and it goes on up the sponsor chain. And always go to our literature, which is Forever Abstinent. So I want to go to our literature. Oh, well, let me just give a little personal information. I've been in the program and abstinent for 20 years and 3 months and 3 days, I believe. And I've been maintaining about a 90-pound weight loss for over 19 years. So, and I have never, ever, ever through the grace of God, ever felt that I have graduated or that I will graduate. No doubt in my mind. I mean, I always say I'd taken the first step before I even knew what the first step was. I knew I was powerless over food when I walked into these rooms because I didn't have any food issues as a child. As an adolescent, I was in my early 20s when I first gained some weight. But after that, my pattern was to, first I gained 10 pounds, lost it. Then I gained 20 pounds, lost it. Still didn't realize that this would become this roaring, raging disease that it became for me. Lost it, kept it off a number of years. Then I gained 40 pounds, lost it. Then I gained 60 pounds, lost it. Then I gained 80 pounds, lost it. Then I gained 100 pounds, and I was 100 pounds when I came into these rooms. And each of those periods, you know, I gained the weight, and I always lost it, and I would keep it off for a number of years. But then, and I would always say, when I gain 5 pounds, I'm going to immediately lose those 5 pounds because I know how hard it is to lose 40, 60, 80. And, you know, before I knew it, I would be up 80 pounds. I mean, I never knew. So, so I knew that I was powerless over food when I walked into these rooms. And through the grace of God, I was brought into the rooms of HOW. It's the only 12-step program, the first 12-step program I was in, and the only food 12-step program I've ever been in. And it works for me because of the structure. I need the structure. Fred S. wrote some things that are being edited and will eventually, after their conference approved, be out for the fellowship. And one of the things he said, which I found really, really helpful, is that surrendering is being willing to do it someone else's way. And that sounds so simple. But for me, that's what has worked in this program. The diets that I went on, I lost the weight. But they were, even though they were written down, I was in charge of that diet, you know. And the difference for me in being in this program is that we're all in this program. We all follow this food plan. It's no longer doing it my way. It's a covenant with each other. We have a covenant, I think, with each other of this is what we're doing, and I'm doing it to the best of my ability. And that makes a huge difference for me. So back to Forever Abstinent. We have on page 5, Ready, Set, Go. And here it is, all like right here. See your doctor. And that addresses the food plan. It's suggested that you see your doctor to sign off on the food program, and that is for protection for CHOW as well as for the member, to if you have health problems, to see your physician about it. Now, at the World Service Business Conference, which preceded the convention, the delegates from all over the country, us individual delegates, you know, people from your meeting who become delegates to the World Service Business Conference, passed a motion to revise a little bit of this book to make the sections on medical abstinence more clear. So that will, the next printing of this book, and the office has been ordering small quantities because they knew this change was perhaps upcoming. So the next edition of this book will have a little different language regarding medical abstinence, which has been needed for quite some time. So the first thing, ready, set, go, see your doctor with the food plan. And then secondly, do not try to, this is on page 5, do not try to do this alone. Get a sponsor. And of course in HOW, that is essential. We don't get the food plan unless we have a sponsor. And that's not because the food plan is some magic secret proprietary thing. It's because the program does not work unless, the food plan does not work unless we work the program. And in order to work the program, we need a sponsor. There's a great line in the third tradition of the 12 and 12, and it says that one of our responsibilities is to give everyone the same great chance for recovery that we had. And to me, that means sponsoring the program the way it's written. That's what was done for me, and I was given a chance for recovery because of that. And so we don't do it alone, we do it with a sponsor. And it's so important to have a strong sponsor. We always say you ask someone to sponsor you who has what you want. And I had a sponsor my first 2 years, and one day I was calling in my food tour, and she said, I can't sponsor you anymore. And I said, why? And she said, well, I'm really not working the program anymore, and you're the only person who doesn't know it. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And I was panicked. And so I knew I had a choice. I could get a sponsor. By then, I'd been in 2 years. I could get a sponsor that I could perhaps manipulate, which appealed to me, or I could get a sponsor who was really strong and black and white, and which I knew I needed. And so I asked someone to sponsor me who was strong and black and white, and I always figured, you know, the saving grace in our program, I could always then later say, thank you very much for everything you've given me. I need to hear a new voice, or whatever we say when we move on. And that sponsor I still thank on my Howe birthday. I thank her for the foundation she gave me. She was my sponsor for 8 years. And, you know, initially, I mean, not only initially, I often rebelled. And I learned from her, this is the way I sponsor, you know. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful thing to learn. So even though I disagreed often, I did what she suggested, and I'm always grateful for that. So the second thing, get a sponsor, don't do this alone. Then we weigh and measure our food. And again, what a saving grace. We weigh and measure our food. I'm a quantity eater. I was never a sugar eater. I was a quantity eater. And I was, and I am, a quantity eater. And the great thing about weighing and measuring, again, is the freedom. Every time I surrender to something in here, I have greater freedom. The weighing and the measuring. I weigh and measure my food, and I then can eat every single bit of it, because it's really hard for me to leave food. So I can eat every single bit of it. I can lick my plate, and I do often, you know. And I found myself doing it in public the other day, which was a little embarrassing, but normally I reserve that for when I'm home alone. But the grace is that I weigh and measure, and then I'm free. I'm free to eat it all, and then I can walk away. And again, because of my early strong sponsoring of weighing and measuring, I will sometimes find myself preparing a meal at home, and I'm saying to myself, oh, I'm not gonna weigh the vegetables, you know. And even as I'm saying that, I'm putting them on the scale and weighing them, because that is the routine I got into in my early days, and I think that is so critical and something we can pass on to sponsees. Really, really, really bore in on doing it as it's written as a newcomer, because it's going to save you a billion times as we progress in the program. It certainly saved me a billion times. So the next one is be prepared. And this, too, call ahead to restaurants, conferences, and friends to make sure they're serving food that's on your plan. Explain your nutritional needs. Bring your own food if you want. And one of the things I do as a sponsor, if I have a sponsee who's traveling, we always discuss the travel plans, where they're going, how you're going to, like if it's a long airplane flight, how are you going to take your food? Are you going to have time to get something at, if you have a layover? We always discuss and plan ahead. And if the sponsee is going to a family reunion, which might be bringing up a lot of emotional issues, we talk about that. What are the events you're going to? Well, how can you handle this? So we always prepare. And there's a phrase we have in our rooms, fail to plan to fail. And that is very true. And it's so easy just to plan. You know, it makes life so easy. The next one is do not skip meals or combine meals. And again, all this is so important. Again, that's so valuable because, well, first of all, I would never skip a meal. You know, I have friends who are not in these rooms, and they say, well, the thing is, you know, just keep busy. Sometimes I'm so busy I don't even think about eating lunch. I totally forgot lunch, and I'm just like, what? It would never, I mean, seriously, nothing could be that important. Nothing could be that important that I would ever miss a meal. Mm-hmm. So that part has never been an issue. But the combining of meals or shorting myself in a meal, you know, like having one cup of vegetables instead of two at lunch, and then at dinner saying, oh boy, I can make up for lunch and I can have four cups. And that is so critical. And again, it's explained to me by my sponsor, the reason we don't short ourselves in meals and say, well, I don't have to eat all this, is because of my crazy, tricky mind. At the next meal, I'll say, well, I didn't have enough at lunch. I can have more at dinner. And boy, I know me, you know. Then if I had more at dinner, that would become my new standard. The next night, I'd have the same amount for no reason. And so that's critical. And if it's too much to eat, maybe because I'm not feeling well, and again, I'm the only person I know who, I don't care how sick I am, I will eat my entire complete absolute meal. But if I've had sponsees, you know, who may not have felt well and couldn't eat everything, or something was going on and they just weren't hungry, and rather than, and I made a note about this, rather than cutting out things, and again, I was taught this, it's, I don't cut back on quantities, and I ask my sponsees not to cut back on quantities. We rearrange what they're eating. If they're eating starchy vegetables, go to spinach. But we can rearrange. We keep the quantities. We keep the food plan. We follow the food plan. We just rearrange what we're eating, and it works, you know, because again, once I start playing with my food, I'm in trouble. I am in trouble. The fewer decisions I have, the better off I am. Did I set my timer? I didn't.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll just give five. Okay, the next one, weigh yourself monthly. And again, you know, this is something that many of us have because many of us have been weight obsessed for a great part of our lives. Weighing all the time is so critical. Or if you're like me, because I never like to look at unpleasant things, I never weighed. But that's part of the program is we don't weigh every day and obsess about the number on the scale. We weigh once a month until we reach maintenance, and then we weigh once a week. And you know, I've talked to people who will get on and off, when they're even on their monthly weigh-in, they'll get on and off the scale four times and move it to different places in the room to see if it changes, you know. And you know, and again, I ask my sponsees, weigh once, because your body is not going to change no matter where you put that scale. And it doesn't matter the number on the scale. You know, if you walk around in the world and people see you, are you going to carry your scale and say, see this number? No, they're going to see you. So it doesn't matter what the number on the scale says. Weigh once. Food, the next one, food may be baked, boiled, roasted, pan-broiled, grilled, or oven-broiled. I mean, we have really clear instructions. And the reason for that is basically not deep fried foods, and so that we have a lot of oil. And it goes on to say use nonstick pans, avoid nuts, sweets. Now nuts are on our food plan in maintenance. Sweets, of course, fried foods, honey, flour, sugar, things that we all know. Next is read labels, and this is critical too. This is critical, especially for newcomers to learn right off the bat. Start right off reading the ingredients and on every package. Where was I recently? I was someplace, restaurant, I suppose, and actually asked them to bring out the bottle or the jar or whatever it was, so I could read the ingredients, because I had asked them about sugar and they didn't quite know. And you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding in the public, and they don't need to know. I'm the only one who needs to know. So I asked them to bring out the jar or the bottle, and I read the ingredients to see what was in it. And reading the labels is so critical, because sugar is in things you wouldn't even dream sugar would be in. It's amazing. It's amazing. And in the many forms of sugar too. So just asking someone, is there sugar in this, asking someone at a restaurant something, is not sufficient, because no, there's no sugar in it. You know, there's honey in it, there's high fructose corn syrup in it, there's agave syrup in it, but no, there's no sugar in it. So again, I'm responsible for my abstinence. They're not responsible for my abstinence. My friend isn't responsible for my abstinence. I'm responsible for my abstinence. So reading labels and starting right off, and asking your sponsees right off to read labels all the time is wonderful. If and the next one, if you are unsure about anything, leave it alone. And again, you know, if something is not specifically addressed in Forever Abstinent, then we have these fabulous umbrella policies that save us. And the short version of if you are unsure about anything, leave it alone is when in doubt, leave it out. And so that covers anything that's not specific in here. The other thing that in my mind covers anything that is not specific in here is avoid binge foods. There it is. You know, what someone else could eat with impunity, I have to leave alone, because we were talking about fruits yesterday, and there's certain, I never buy because I would have to eat 7 pounds of them. It's just the way it is. So I don't even, you know, I don't even buy them. So that would be a binge food for me. Oh, and we have when in doubt, leave it out. That's the next one, which sounds pretty redundant, but there it is. Nothing wrong, especially in these rooms, nothing wrong with redundancy. Every day, write down your meal plan and discuss it with your sponsor. And of course, that's part of our, one of the basics of our program. And again, that gives me such freedom. And one of my early sponsors always said, we don't report our food, we commit our food. So I don't call my sponsor and say, this is what I had. You know, I always call my sponsor and commit to what I'm going to have, because what's the point of reporting it to a sponsor? I'm committing it. And that's what our language says. We commit our food on a daily basis. And I just scratched the surface of this book. I, as you know, I didn't time myself, but the last thing I want to say is also in Forever Abstinent, as I said, everything is in our literature. In Forever Abstinent on pages 10, 11, and 12 is what is called the World Service Policy Letter on Food Questions. And that answers so many questions. So if you ask your sponsor and your sponsor doesn't know, go to page 11 and 12 in Forever Abstinent and read the policy letter, and I'll bet your question will be answered in that. Again, everything goes back to the literature. All of our answers are in the literature. And Forever Abstinent is our basic guide. Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela. Now I'll share for 10 to 15 minutes on my experience.
I'm timing you, John.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, you took some of my time, but anyhow. I'm okay, anyhow. I'm John, compulsive eater, for those of you who came in later. And and I want to welcome all of you here. I've been in the program since April 10th of 2000, and I've been maintaining a, you know, give or take within 3 to 4 pounds, a 44 pound weight loss for over 14 years. And so, you know, this program definitely works, and it's the only thing that's worked for me. I was pretty much, as a kid growing up, a periodic eater. I got into the booze early on, and I was restless, irritable, discontent type of an individual. And my parents, I was the oldest child, and was unhappy when I was no longer an only child. And so I am very selfish, self-centered by nature. And so it's my parents were challenged, and my way of getting attention was negative attention. So in school, I didn't, Johnny doesn't pay attention, Johnny doesn't do this. I was sent to the cloakroom, and I was paddled by the principal and enjoyed it, actually. And and I'm a troublemaker. So, and I had to be sent away to private school. I had absolutely no discipline, and just always looked for the easier, softer way. So, however, you know, I did go to prep school, so that did get me to college. And then I'm one of these people, I'm smart enough to squeeze by when I'm put in the corner. But, you know, I've always been kind of a BC student, and I just didn't want to work that hard to, you know, to care, you know, and that's kind of the way I am. So, I became an adult and just kind of wallowed in mediocrity And of course, in the meantime, I went through, what's this, to sign something here? Okay, so they don't sue us. Okay, anyhow. So this program fits me to a T because guess what I need? You know, I had to go to prep school to get to college, and how I finished college I'll never know, but I was either on academic probation or on the dean's list. It was kind of one or the other, and got finished stuff through duress. And so what happened after I entered my other 12-step program, then I did, after 3 or 4 years, I started to put on some weight, and so I went to my first OA meeting. Because I never went to Weight Watchers or some of those. So I did try exercise, dieting, but it got out of hand. And I thought, I was helped with my other addiction, and so maybe I could go to OA. I heard of OA. I got a sponsor, and I lost the weight, but I did somehow, and it was OA how, and I did somehow, and it worked for a while. But then somehow led to know-how. And I graduated. So I learned, and then what happened after I graduated, my roommate had been out of town, and I stopped going to meetings, and then and it took a few months, and then that's when I had a slip, and then while I had that slip, while a roommate I had was out of town, and when he came back 2 weeks later, he didn't say, "Hello, John." He said, "Holy shit, you're eating again." So, within 2 weeks, he knew. Yeah. And some people ask me, are you still doing that program? I said, "You won't have to ask." I said, "You'll know if I stop. So you don't never have to ask. You'll know." And that's it, because I just, And I am truly a compulsive eater, because if I put sugar or flour into my system that's not based on this food plan here, I get the phenomenon of craving, just like I do if I pick up a drink. For me, I got that problem too. But just the same thing with the food. And so I really need to adhere to what it says to do in here. And that is the flour rule and all this stuff. And I'll tell you, and another thing it talked about, which wasn't covered, and I think, so I had left the program, of course, and didn't come back for 12 years. And at that point, I tried everything. I even became a chiropractor. I went back to school, I got up to my top weight while I was in school. I got up to nearly 210 pounds, and I'm 150 now. So, and I was going up and eating the junk and everything, and then I tried this diet, and I got down to, I think, maybe 175 or something like that, and that didn't work. And then when I get out of school, I did the AIDS rides. But then I came back to Howe because I ran into a friend who 12-stepped me. In fact, he's even here at the convention. I was glad to see him, and who had lost 150 pounds, and so he said it was Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, and it ended up due to the politics, and it talks about that. I'm sure many of you know about it, where they switched over to CEA Howe. So I went to my first meeting, and I knew that I had to really work the tools, and I had to go to three meetings a week or more. I only went to one or two because I was doing the other thing too, but they were feeding me in that program. So I had to come here and get my experience, strength, and hope with food. But this one, because it does say here, now some people tried to change this not too long ago. We get this once in a while, to add alcohol into the food plan as fruit. But, you know, but they haven't done that yet. So this program will help me here. What do I have, 10 minutes left?
Five.
Okay. So anyhow, going into that, you know, I just need the structure here. So I wanted to mention something it talked about. You know, you do everything you can, I think, to stay abstinent, especially in the beginning. But it did talk about chewing gum and some of this stuff. And I'll tell you what, I had to quit chewing gum. But I did, my first year or so, I chewed gum till I was blue in the face until I won't say, but I had to do extra laundry. And I also you didn't want to smoke a cigarette around me either, or light a cigarette, you know. So it was quite, let's say, quite gross. And I reached my bottom with the chewing gum, and I also tried something, and I don't know, you know, some people do that. They have these no-calorie breath mints thing. And a friend gave me those, and you know what? I ate a whole package of them in 5 minutes. Now, see, I just can't handle that kind of stuff. So any of this stuff, I don't chew gum like a gentleman. And I know there's a lot of people in here that don't, and I used to bite my tongue, so it's crazy. But you know, if you got to do it to stay abstinent, it's okay, like, you know, other things. And again, there's some other stuff here about sponsorship. And, you know, myself being a sponsor, you know, and I've been around a while, I can't question too much stuff. You know, it talks about questioning certain foods or whether you should have your salad dressing. Why do they have it like where you can't have it at lunch and dinner when you're newer? And you know what? It doesn't really matter. Just do it, you know. Just follow it. And I had a situation where I went on a trip, and so I wanted to switch. You know, I used to eat, now I only have 4 ounces of protein. Hey, you got to let go of the food as you get older in this program. But anyhow, I wanted to switch and have my 6 ounces at night rather than at lunch, which I was had it that way. And, you know, my sponsor says, no, I want you just to keep your food the same, you know. And, you know, it was just for 4 days. And, you know, and I had talked to somebody else with, you know, and they said to me, oh, well, I would have let my sponsees do that. And I said, I would have let my own. But you know what? He's my sponsor. And I just, whether, you know, it wouldn't have made any difference, you know. And I just say, you know what? He's my sponsor, and I'm just going to do what he tells me. And what's the difference? And see, that's surrender, no matter how smart you are, or what you know, or whether I might know something more than my sponsor does in some area. And you know what? He's my sponsor, so I just follow direction. And I just I've learned to do that, and that's real important in this program, because you know, the ego will you know, take you out. And so I really keep into that, and today I just you know, I need the structure, and I need the discipline that this program offers us. And you know, you don't have to do this stuff if you don't want to, but and we welcome everyone here who wants to stop eating compulsively. But if you want to guarantee or ensure your recovery, as it says in the Forever Abstinence, then, you know, following the food plan, following, making your phone calls, going to 3 meetings a week, doing your writing. I still write, and, you know, I haven't graduated from writing, and doing the step work and working on yourself, that ensures our recovery. And that's what's required to get recovery, because if you don't do the work and if you don't follow what it says to do in here, then it's probably unlikely that you're going to have the recovery that you really want. So anyhow, with that, we'll have the remainder here with questions and answers. So, and I want to thank you all for being here and participating in this workshop. And I want to thank my co-workers here. Thank you. And yes, young lady.
Hi.
excuse me, if you'd go to the microphone, please, and also anybody who speaks, please sign the release form because
yeah.
this is being recorded and will appear on the Howe website.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Deb, and I'm a compulsive eater. Couple things on the food plan itself is I came into CEA Howe this year, and I've completed my 30 days, and I started getting cramps in my legs because I also picked up on exercise at the same time. So anyway, I started getting cramps, especially early in the morning, in my legs and my feet, and it wasn't going away. So I had scheduled a doctor's visit, a checkup with my primary, and I was explaining this to her. I said, you know, I said, I'm having a problem with cramping. And so we went through the whole list of things everybody had, you know, said what it may be. And so she did take some tests, but she said, and I showed her the abstinent plan book and talked to her about it, and she thought it was wonderful. She's a good doctor. And she said, Deb, she said, had you thought about salt? And I said, you know, I just quit eating salt. I've never been a huge salt sodium person anyway. And I said, you know, I just don't use it. I use other spices, lemon pepper and the paprika and all those, some other things that, you know, taste good to me. And she said, our bodies are water and salt. And she said, really, you do need some sodium. She said, I have been told, she said, and have talked about it, to eat a pickle several times a day, which is on our program. And she said, at night, because she said, you're obviously dehydrating at night, because the leg cramps come real early in the morning. And she said, just drink a little bit of pickle juice. And she said, but you don't want to eliminate sodium completely. And I did that. And my cramps are 99.9% gone. So it's one thing I did learn about the program, and that's not an endorsement. That was my physician telling me. It's my experience with muscle cramping because I also, at the same time, like I said, started working out with a trainer. So my exercise doubled, and I'm from Phoenix, Arizona, and so now it is 113 there. So all of that happened at the same time. And for me, sodium, I just have to work a little bit harder at keeping sodium in the diet. With the food plan, it is easy just to eliminate sodium. The other thing is that incorporating, I eat wheat germ, and I don't know how everybody else, if anybody else uses wheat germ a lot or how they use it. As I understand it, it's 2 tablespoons as a vegetable. And other than putting it in yogurt, I might, you know, like to hear how somebody else is incorporating wheat germ as a vegetable. Other than that, I do have to say that in all of my life, I have never been on a food program that has been so satisfying, that has been as flexible as I need it to be. I crave nothing. Well, I know it was my higher power that brought me to CEA Howe. It's just the most phenomenal program I've ever been in, and especially about the food. But everything else is just wonderful. But so I can't say enough about the food and the plan. How it's written in the book is just tremendous to me.
That was a question, too, about wheat germ.
Yeah,
I've never really used it, but
page 31. Yeah, go to the forever abstinent. What is forever abstinent?
What does forever abstinent say? First thing we say when we have a food question. It's on page 31 about wheat germ.
OK. Okay, yeah. 1 or 2 tablespoons of wheat germ or corn germ may be used as a vegetable or salad replacement. At the bottom of page 31 in the book there.
I think that's again, we have the structure of our program, and those are the sort of questions, A, we ask our sponsor, B, we ask in outreach calls.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank
yeah.
you. I'm new, so I'm learning.
Yeah. Yes.
Hi. I'm Amy, compulsive eater.
Amy.
It's okay. You might have already addressed this. But I just have a question about adding grains. I seem to always slip when I add grains, and I gain weight when I add grains back. And so I just skip that portion. And I know a lot of other people in the program do too. And I just wanted to know a little bit about your experience with that and what your thoughts are. Because I know that grains are important for nutrition, but they seem to be a slippery slope for me. So.
Anybody have experience with problems with grains and that we can think of here? There might be certain foods, maybe the ones you're slipping on. Some people maybe can't eat certain grains but can eat others. So perhaps if there's a grain that you feel you can eat, like, my God, the only time I ever have rice is here at one of these conventions. But a lot of people eat rice. But that, I couldn't imagine, you know, they're just so bland. But maybe that might be a grain you could try, or something that maybe isn't quite as, to ease into it. But there again, I haven't experienced it, and I don't know if any others.
There again, if we go to Forever Abstinent, yep. Here's the answer. On page 20, the first 30 days, we don't have any grains. And then the second 30 days, grains are optional. You don't have to have grains. And so that's the beauty, I believe, as I always say, that we have our food plan, but within the parameters of our food plan, we have tremendous flexibility. We do not all eat the same things. We all eat according to the same food plan, but we don't all eat the same things. Grains trigger some people. Grains are optional. Don't eat grains. Discuss it with your sponsor and don't eat grains. Or, as has been suggested, experiment to see what grains do trigger you and what grains don't. But we work with our sponsors and with our literature to determine that.
Any other questions or comments or
opinions?
I don't know about opinions. But yeah. Anybody having any problems with anything else or? Okay.
I'm Sandy, compulsive eater.
Hey, Sandy.
And I'm able to lose weight in the first 30 days quickly. But now that I'm getting older, and you mentioned this, John, you have to cut back our food as I age, I'm probably not working on it as much as I could, but I think I've come to a point where I need to, where that's true, that as I'm older, the weight is coming off less fast. So could you talk on that a little more? Thank you.
Yes, John, thank you, Sandy. When I first got in here, I got up to where I was eating a gargantuan amount of food. I was eating more than, like, you know, what would be there. And then slowly I've had to let go of some food. And I mean, I was maybe 48 years old when I got in here and did a lot of exercise. And then now I'm 62 years old and I do a fair amount of exercise. But, you know, and I've even added some extra things, and I haven't really, I've lost maybe a couple of pounds, but nothing major. You know, I do a lot of heavy duty hiking, like I'll hike 10 miles with a 25 pound backpack and stuff and do things like that. And then I go on backpacking trips and things. So that's, which is interesting in itself. But yeah, I mean, I'm eating less. I'm down to 4 ounces where I was eating 8 ounces of protein. And then I have a friend who's on maintenance that she's, I guess, close to 65, and she's 5'1", and she's eating, she's found she's had to eat 3 ounces of protein and really cut back and be careful on how much, how frequently she has something like that and some of those things that are higher calories. And, you know, when you get older, and, you know, I don't know, you know, you might be eating less, but it doesn't hurt to eat less if your body calls for it. And then if you do more exercise, and you might find you lose. So it's like that. But if you're even struggling and you're within the, you know, not on maintenance, you know, if you're, you know, eating that piece too, you go out and have a breast and a wing. Well, if you have a breast and a wing at Costco, or you eat there, or you cut there, I can tell you right now, it's four. I have 12 ounces is what a breast and a wing, how much, because I've already. So I get 3 meals out of a breast and a wing. And my sponsor said to me, when I was having 6 ounces, I said, well, I'm only having a breast and a wing. And he said, well, you can have a 3 pieces, can't you? I said, no, because this is a huge piece of meat. So anyhow, is that help? Any other? Yes.
Hi, I'm Karen, compulsive eater, food addict.
Hi, Karen.
And it's kind of in the subject area. Recently, I have wanted to go to become a vegan, and I haven't been able to do it within the food program, and because it seems like everybody I talk to that is a vegan in our program is having some kind of medical abstinence, where they're having, you know, they're adding protein, powdered proteins to their stuff. And so at this point, I am a vegetarian, but I just wonder, do you have any wisdom on how to eliminate and still stay within our, because I am not giving up our program for to become a vegan. So anybody have a legal way to become a vegan in the protein area? I'd like to hear it.
This is Pamela. I do not, but I would like to say that I mentioned the CEHOW website earlier, ceahow.org, which is a great resource. One of the things on the CEHOW website that is not active, only because the members apparently are not interested in it, is an outreach list specifically designed for specific health issues. And the website asks members to respond, and with their specific medical condition, medical issue, whether it's or dietary requirements such as veganism, vegetarianism, and then medical conditions, pregnancy, nursing, diabetes, whatever, so that on the website there will be a resource of members who do have expertise, experience in specific areas. So I would suggest that you put your name in on that outreach list, and the more people who put their names in on the outreach list, the more resources we will have among the fellowship. And again, another resource is outreach calls and putting the word out in outreach calls, asking in your outreach calls if they know anyone in the program who is a vegan and contacting those people. My only experience with this is I do know that there are sugar-free protein powders that can be added. I don't know what they are, but I do know that they do exist.
Okay, yeah, we have time for just one more quick one. Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm Sage, compulsive eater.
Hey, Sage.
I just wanted to respond that I do follow the plan, and I am a vegan, so I'll connect with you. But I also wanted to ask a question, and I know other people who are following the program and are vegans too, so it's definitely possible. My question had to do about eating out. I find that eating out is not the best for my abstinence, and I was wondering how you all may do that. Do you bring scales? Do you not bring scales? Do you find that there are hidden substances in foods that are problematic in terms of your whole program?
I will just respond and say that I basically don't eat out as much, and I used to eat out a lot, and I quit. I just basically don't do it much and fix stuff at home. But if I do eat out, I don't take a scale with me, but I might order something on the menu where the meat is about the right size, and if it isn't, I'll have them cut it or cut it myself and have them bring a doggy bag thing with me and before I start the meal, because otherwise I'll it's like I'm thinking about I think that might not be whatever, and then you keep eating it and pecking away at it, and so it's just better to make a decision, cut it, take care of it just like you would at home, except you're weighing and measuring more. So, I do that, and like there's some restaurants, I usually frequent the same ones when I do go out. So, like if they have some stuff that's they pile on the plate, I'll say, can you just bring me a half a cup of that, or something, just measure it out. I'm not asking for a discount, just because I want to keep my waist the way it is, and so they'll do that for me and stuff. So that's what I do when I eat out, and I'm very careful. I have the dressing on the side. Always ask for that. Make sure they don't bring the and put on there, and just tell them right up front, please don't bring any. Bring this, and that's kind of what I do. Is that helpful at all?
Yeah. And okay. One thing that I know some people do is they ask the server, when you bring my plate, would you please bring a to-go box? And they immediately cut off a portion of the protein or whatever it may be and put it in the to-go box and have it beside their plate. And that way, like we like to do, they can clean their plate.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that covers our... I want to thank you all for coming here and participating. And this is great. And what I'd like to do is just close with, and I would like Pamela to lead us out in the third step prayer.
Thank you. So we'll just stand and do it.
Yeah.
God,
I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and it won't if you don't. So do
it. I got to tell that sage person.
All right.
See, we have all these resources.
Good job, guys.